And welcome to this edition of In the Moment Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. I am your host, Kent Osborne, coming to you from the lovely campus of the University of South Dakota in Vermilion. We've got gathered the experts to talk tech today and answer your questions. We have on the line Mac guru Joel Brovelite from Exigent Solutions, Amos Aesop, and from, of course, the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications and Peer, Jeff Litterick. You ask the questions, we provide the answers. If you're a Facebook aficionado, that page is simply facebook.com/techradio. You can post your comments or questions there. Don't be shy. You can send us a text. It's 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372 today. And, of course, send us a tweet at SDPB if you'd like to. That email address that's so important in the moment at sdpb.org is another way that you can get a hold of us today. Well, guys, a lot going on in the media landscape this week. We've got a lot to talk about. Let's dive right in. We can't subscribe to it yet in South Dakota, but it's going to be close soon. Larger cities, YouTube and Google have announced YouTube TV, a subscription service for folks to get their television via the internet. Is this innovative, guys, or are we? Is this the way things are going?
Well, I would definitely say that this is the way things are going to go. I can't say it's really innovative because we've seen, services like PlayStation View by Sony or Sling TV by Dish Network, as well as a few others, kind of dip their toe in the streaming area. The funny thing is these services, I think YouTube TV one is around $35 a month.
Right.
Which honestly starts to sound like a cable bill to me. So it seems to, and you don't also, the dream of being able to pick, these 14 channels and not have these 14, not exactly coming true. But the upside is there's going to actually be competition for watching, cable or watching video, whether that's watching ABC or CBS or ESPN or whatever it is you want. Whereas in about over 90% of the markets in the United States, you basically have one provider you can get, counting, the satellite network. So it should be interesting. I'll definitely check it out once we're able to get it here in Sioux Falls.
Right. Have you, Joel, have you checked out the Facebook TV now available through your Apple TV?
I haven't. From my understanding, and I haven't looked into it too much, so correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is it's mostly content either purchased or created by Facebook. It isn't really a true streaming service. Am I right about that?
Well, I don't have an Apple TV. I haven't actually been able to do that. One's on order.
Well,
I'll have one soon.
I'll definitely give you a report next show.
Okay.
But, from what I've read, and maybe the other guys know the answer to this, from what I've read, it's mostly Facebook videos and content that Facebook has purchased, not exactly using that app to watch, say, ESPN2 or Fox.
Right. It's videos, so. Yes, posted on Facebook. So basically, the videos that we sometimes watch on Facebook now available via Apple TV. That content
so
source
that,
there.
I wouldn't consider that to be a comparable service to
YouTube
TV. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely going down the road of, how people want to view their content. They want to be able to, kind of watch it natively on whatever device it is that they're using, whether that's, an Apple TV or streaming set-top box like the ones that Google makes or those type of things. Because for a long time we've been able to stream our video from our device to the TV, but even when that works fantastically, and most of the time it does for either Mac or PC, it's just not the same as kind of a custom-built interface for whatever device that is, whether that's a tablet, computer, a phone, or in this case, your television. So we're moving towards that direction, but again, I don't see it as kind of groundbreaking as some of these other things that are available.
Sure. It's just another way, another outlet for those videos that are sourced. And we've been, I guess, at Public Broadcasting here in South Dakota, we've been kind of experimenting with the video on Facebook. I know last night we premiered a Dakota Life segment, and we streamed that live on Facebook. We've did some basketball tournaments last month. We've been kind of dipping our big toe into it to see what kind of the public reaction is on it. But interesting, and I guess in my opinion on the YouTube TV, it's going to be interesting to see. Certainly, they're going to have, you know, a broad market, you know, availability here. That, you know, Sling TV has got about 1 million subscribers. YouTube and Google, you know, they'll be able to squeeze a few more than that out of there. They've just got more, I guess, access to the ability to do that than a lot of other folks, and they can take a loss, frankly, to get the thing started that a lot of companies can't do. But the reaction from other systems, and I just want to see what the ripple effect is of YouTube getting into this. That's the interesting part for me. Not necessarily that when I'm able to, that I can go subscribe for $35, like you say, but I want to see what the reaction is by all the rest of the people in the market. That's my interest in this. Anybody else have a comment on YouTube TV before we move on?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the cool things that I had read about YouTube TV, one of the nice features, and I don't know if this is going to change or not, but that, you know, you've got unlimited cloud DVR, which would, you know, allow you to record just like you would be doing at home on a set-top box or any normal hardware. But that right now, when you play those shows back, there are no commercials. So, you know, for those of us who, you know, I rarely watch live TV anymore, and one of the benefits of that DVR is being able to fast forward through the commercials, that's going to be a real benefit as well. I hope that they keep that, because that would sell me on it versus some of the other services that don't provide that same service.
Absolutely.
And yeah, Amos brings up a really good point. You know, I actually have used both Sling and PlayStation View. I've used both of those services, and they constantly get better. But, you know, in my family, the biggest complaint so far has been the no DVR capability, although they have other options, like they have lots of on-demand content on the PlayStation View, and Sling TV has something similar. It's not the same as recording exactly what you want when you want it. So I think Amos is 100% right, and I totally predict the other services and anything new coming will have to incorporate that capability one way or another to kind of compete.
Sure, sure. So YouTube going from a platform to a provider, I guess. That's going to be interesting. And Jeff, you mentioned in an email earlier some news concerning Amazon.
Yeah, this kind of ties into the YouTube and one of the things I find with the YouTube and their announcement of the services, they're trying to, you know, find a way to make a profit in the industry. They've been struggling for quite a long time, trying different stuff, and they've had a lot of ad-based revenue kind of disappear here recently, and they're changing their terms for a lot of their channels. You need to be able to get ads money from the ads, you need at least 10K views. So YouTube is making some fundamental shifts, not just on the TV side, but trying to become a little bit more profitable, I think, and bringing that money. And they have the infrastructure to be able to offer that cloud DVR and all those nice features. So it'd be kind of interesting to see how that all pans out in the end, especially with all the changes to their kind of, you know, low view content that's more niche, and what kind of changes they're making with that. So, and then this ties in kind of into the whole money thing is, if you remember last year, Twitter had the rights to stream the NFL Thursday games. Well, they lost those rights this year to Amazon, and YouTube also bid. Amazon, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter all bid this year to stream the NFL games, and Amazon Prime won. And Amazon paid almost three times what Twitter did last year for those same rights. So there's a lot of jockeying going on in the market for video streaming services and who's going to have the content and stuff. I think between Netflix and YouTube TV and all this stuff, we might see kind of some power plays going on, some more exclusive content. Both Amazon and Netflix are really ramping up in that, trying to become the big player in there. And we'll see how it all shakes out over the next couple of years.
No, wait a minute. Wasn't the cool thing about having the NFL on Twitter was like you were in a big collective living room with everybody, kind of watching the game and making comments? Wasn't that the fun part?
Well, we'll see if the viewership stays up. Maybe, but Twitter did $10 million, and the winning bid was well over 30. So the NFL basically said, for streaming, that wasn't as big of a deal as actually the money that they would gain from whoever wanted to stream it. So
okay. We'll
see what Amazon Prime does with it. But it will be on Amazon Prime this next season. And we'll see how it goes out. And Twitter was actually the lowest bidder from all reports by far. So everyone else sees some real value in this. And Twitter just literally could not afford to bid high enough to retain the rights, which has all its own implications for Twitter in the future, too, because if they can't compete, what will happen to Twitter in the long run, too? So we've talked about that in the past, too, as maybe they should become kind of more of a utility kind of service, but they will never be able to offer the big kind of streaming stuff because they just don't have the money money that the Amazons and Netflixes and YouTubes have to offer. So
it's funny you use the word utility, because that actually moves us into the next topic I was going to talk about. Same topic, actually, but a little different bend to it. The FCC met Tuesday with trade groups and from the internet and the tech industry, and discussed the preliminary plan to move quickly to repeal the Obama administration's landmark network neutrality rules that prohibited broadband providers from giving or selling access to the speedy internet, essentially the fast lane, to certain services and others. And Roku and others in the business, that could make it harder on them and in some cases more expensive to offer content and services at top download speeds. They hired some lobbyists and some outside government affairs firms, that's according to some ethics reports filed early this week, specifically to focus on net neutrality. Are we going to have a big battle on this coming up, or is this going to be those reforms going to be pushed through, do you think, Jeff?
Well, I'll put this out. The FCC has announced he'd like to see voluntary agreements on net neutrality now instead of the mandated ones.
Okay.
But the second they announced they were going to scrap it, Verizon made the announcement that they're going to actually install and force a piece of software they have onto every single Verizon phone, and the only thing this software does is track your web usage and record it. It's the only thing it does. It gives you no benefit except recording everything the phone does on the internet, and like I said, they announced it the day after they said the net neutrality stuff and all these privacy laws and the whole web bill, which we haven't talked about selling web data, has gone through and been signed. So some big changes happening. We'll see. I don't think the major players are going to agree to voluntary net neutrality stuff. So, yes, it may become a very big battle overall, and it will take some time to sort it all out. So
yeah, we're going to actually get to that in the next segment of the show. We'll get to the internet basically losing their collective minds last week with the internet privacy and the sale of their data by SPs. But we're gonna have to take some more time to do that. But
on one benefit,
yeah.
As soon as they announced the net neutrality rules, Comcast and another ISP, I can't remember, major one, may have been AT&T or Verizon, added a whole bunch of more free services that do not impact data caps. So as soon as they knew this was coming, they added a whole bunch of other video service providers and took them off the data caps. So especially for mobile users, that's a big deal. So we'll see how it all plays out in the end, if it was beneficial or not. Maybe it'd be favoritism, but if it's favoritism to what everybody wants to watch, like Netflix, then you know, most users are going to see a benefit, not a disadvantage, maybe. But that, like I said, that will all take time to hash out, and we'll see what falls out.
Okay. Amos, what do you think of this, the repeal of the, I guess they're calling them landmark net neutrality protections that the Obama era folks put in?
Well, you know, real quickly, net neutrality and the changes here, the things that we're looking at happening is that as providers have more content on the wire for the ISPs, specifically video, I mean, we just talked about the YouTube TV and all the other sources that come from it, this is going to allow more to be charged for that because using YouTube TV as an example, they're using more of the resources of those ISPs, right? They're requiring those ISPs to upgrade all of their pipes and all of their equipment in order to be able to handle this. And so because of that, they want to charge those providers more, which in turn ends up going to the end customer. And those who are for net neutrality are saying, no, we should be able to send traffic down the internet no matter what it is or how much it is without having to pay more or less. We just, you know, we're using the information highway just like everybody else is. I think it's going to be difficult for the major providers to not get in on this. You know, if YouTube TV wants to continue to provide their service at $35 a month, they certainly are not going to be able to sustain some major increases in charges from those ISPs. And then you're going to start to see the smaller ones, the smaller providers who don't pay as much, you know, people are going to start to migrate to them because of the lower cost. So I think we'll definitely see the big players step in, you know, to lobby for this, to do what they can to keep the prices down so that they don't price themselves out of the market.
So the ISPs are going to be charging the big streaming companies for access to the larger pipe, and then the same is going to happen to the consumer? So the ISPs are going to make it on both ends?
Well, no, because when the ISP, I guess that's possible, but when the ISP charges the provider higher rates to put their content across their network, somebody has to pay for that, and the provider's certainly not going to just, out of the goodness of their heart, pay for that extra. So it's just going to be rolled into what the consumer pays for. It's just like anything else. So, you know, when gas prices go up and truckers who go along the interstates have to pay more, the end user ends up paying more because it costs more for that service. So that's really where that would end up heading.
Hmm. Okay.
A good example of that is, I want to say maybe 3 years ago now, it might have been 2 years ago, Netflix had a big issue with Comcast customers in that Comcast customers were having subpar Netflix experience. But if they used a VPN to bypass Comcast peering points with Netflix, their video was just fine. So there was plenty of bandwidth in the network, but Comcast refused to upgrade the connection that Netflix was using to their customers, so it was always congested and degraded, and all the users using it had poor video quality. And then it took, they hashed it out in public and in private for quite a while, and Netflix finally agreed to pay Comcast to upgrade that pipe so that all the Comcast users could have better performance. And that was, you know, just around the time Netflix raised their prices the first time, too. So, you know, it all does have an impact on the pricing, and it has happened before the net neutrality rules, in that providers forced, if you want these really big pipes for the video, you're going to have to pay to make these connections into our network.
Okay. Well, a reminder to folks at home, if you'd like to ask a question today or have something sussed out a little better for you, give us a text, 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372 today. Twitter users, at SDPB or at Kent SDPB, if you'd like to add me, that'd be great. The email address, of course, is in the moment at sdpb.org. Before we go to break here quickly, Joel, we got an iPad, a new iPad coming out. Let's talk about that just real quickly.
Yeah, you know, kind of it's just over $300. So that's kind of the major feature. It basically incorporates a lot of the great features that were in the iPad Air 2. Really targeted at people that haven't upgraded their tablet in a while. Apple's just kind of putting the full-size iPad in the reach of people who maybe either need an upgrade or don't want to spend $500 on the tablet, or maybe use the iPad mini before and need to get a full-size one. So, you know, it's got the thumbprint reader and, you know, a great screen and pretty large. So, other than that, there aren't a lot of whole new things with it. So
Yeah, they're not real shy about admitting it's the biggest feature is probably the price.
Well, and like I said, this is something Apple has done through the years. After a product gets kind of established and maybe, they've sold how many ever millions of them, they kind of need to shock everybody in order to get them to move on a new product. Because let's face it, if you have a five-year-old iPad, it still works pretty darn well. So you need kind of prodding to upgrade, and this is their way of doing that.
Sure. Well, thanks for the update on that. Guys, hang tight. We need to take a quick break, go do some business. When we come back, though, we want to talk about, as we mentioned before, the folks kind of lost their minds last week on the whole internet privacy and the sale of data by ISPs. And we're going to, I guess, put that into perspective when we come back on the next segment of Tech Radio with the Computer Guy. And we're back to the back half of Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys on member-supported SDPB Radio, as we mentioned earlier. We want to dig in a little deeper on some news from last week. Guys, and I don't know, was there a little bit of misinformation going on, or was I not understanding this correctly? What was billed, I guess, as a repeal of some protections, basically ISPs collecting data and reselling it and things like that. But this law didn't really change the status quo, did it? It really just kept something from going into force. Am I right?
There was a lot of misinformation about that going on, and you're right. It does. It kept a new rule from going into effect, and so in reality, nothing is really changing, especially for the average consumer. And then we also saw online, to use your verbiage, the fact that the internet lost their collective minds, that there were some Kickstarters or some GoFundMes, I forget which what they were using, but that they were going to try to raise money in order to be able to purchase the internet histories of the Congress people who supported these laws.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that little sideshow thing going on.
Yeah, they were going to post those online and show them, you know, just how horrible this is. But the problem is that's not really what the issue is. I mean, that's just not really possible, right? There's no way to go out and collect the internet history or purchase the internet history of, let's say, South Dakota's Kristi Noem or whoever it happens to be in your local area. That's not the information that's collected. It's not on an individual person. It's on an aggregated, mostly anonymized level. So you're buying, you know, kind of the collective information of people who might be in, you know, South Dakota or in the upper Midwest or whatever it is, and you're not getting individual information. So those were some things that were kind of, misunderstandings that were out there. And it's mostly just because people, who's going to actually go and read the legislation, the entire, 500-page document or whatever it was? It was just kind of the hive mentality of, one person starts that and everybody thinks it's a great idea, and so they jumped on. I certainly hope that people recognized what was going on and didn't actually donate to those things, too much money.
Yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, just a couple of things about that. One thing to keep in mind also is that the rules, the law basically forbid, had it actually taken effect yet to stop ISPs from selling that particular data. They were going to go into effect here fairly soon. So this bill basically heads it off. So it didn't like change anything. It just stopped what was going to change. But I will say this. One thing, and I want to pick on Verizon because the other big ones, is Verizon has been tracking to the device level. Now, they may not sell that data, but it is important to realize with the Verizon super cookies, as they're called, and with this new piece of software they're installing, they will be able to identify and track to a device all the websites and everything you go. Now, because they know the device and they know the user or who owns that device, they could do that. And that's not saying they're going to, but it is an important concept that ISPs actually do have the ability to track to your individual device, and it's up to them if they decide how they want to sell that information. Nobody's sold that kind of level of information up to this point. It's always been more grouped together for advertisers. And the main people who are looking at this is for targeted advertising. But that doesn't mean in the future that they could not do that. The technology is there very easily to do it to the user. So it's one of those things we have to watch out, and maybe there are protections that need to be placed in the future once again.
Mm-hmm. I got to say, I'm kind of proud. My ISP came out on record last week and said, we don't collect this data. We're not going to start collecting this data. And we're not going to sell your data. And maybe I'm a little weird. I got a little couple of butterflies in my stomach. I was kind of proud of that. So good
well,
job.
You know, I mean, I think that's the thing to realize, that most companies, if they want to stay in business, are probably not going to sell your data. But the big deal is this law that was going to take effect, just like Jeff said, ensured that that ISPs couldn't do that with your data. That doesn't mean that they can't now. So it is a kind of scary for anybody out there that, you know, maybe wants more privacy than other people. If you listen to the show for a while, you know that I'm not real big on that. I like to at least have the option. And for those people that don't really understand, you know, what we're talking about, the service providers wanted to have the same flexibility with data that advertisers like Google and Facebook have. If you access Google's website and you browse around there, or you click on ads that are supported by Google, it can collect data on any number of things from your device. All of these advertisers can do that. But the ISPs want also to be able to do that, to collect data, and this law was going to stop them from being able to do that. It's not the same thing. I really wish that law had been able to take effect. That's my opinion, of course. But we're going to see a lot of, news on this, I would guess, in the next 6 months or so. I know there are already some lawsuits that are filed. But unfortunately, some of the other news that's out there has kind of overshadowed what probably would have been, similar to the shutdown of things like Wikipedia we saw maybe, 3 years ago.
All right. I'm just going to make a comment. I thought one of the great things that happened out of this week was an increased awareness of privacy. I saw now, albeit the delivery mechanism was some blogs where people really freaked out and maybe said some things that I didn't agree with, and they talked about a lot of really the boogeyman coming to get you, basically. But there were well written blog pieces and articles that did talk about easy ways of using VPNs, or introducing you to what a VPN is, or some benefits of that. I downloaded and tried a plugin. I think it's from the EFF, the Freedom Foundation, Electronic Freedom Foundation. Frontier Foundation. Is that the one? They've got the browser plugin that forces the HTTPS on a website. So a lot of websites have HTTP protocol, and then they've got the secure, the S protocol, and by default, you don't automatically go to it. And this browser plugin forces you to the secure part of their version of their website, so that there's that secure pipe between you and them, and nobody does peek at what you're doing.
On that one, they can't peek at what you're doing on the website, but they still gather the domain name of what you're going to. So they could see that you're going to Google or Facebook. They just can't see what you're doing. If you even want to stop the ISP from seeing that, then you can use a free VPN tunnel type service, which will then tunnel your traffic to someplace else, like the East Coast or West Coast, before it leaves the encrypted tunnel. And that way, your local ISP can never actually even see the domain. So there are a couple different levels of security you can do.
But at least they were having that conversation publicly, and some were a little bit rabid, but some were on a more measured tone, and I think they really were able to explain it to the layperson, you know, because I started seeing people talking about it on Facebook, and this is, I don't have a lot of tech friends on Facebook, and when I see that sort of, those sort of issues bubbling up about Tor and other VPNs and other things, then I know it's kind of reaching the masses.
The problem I'll just mention with Tor, because that's becoming very popular in discussion, is Tor has its own security issues in that you must use a special version of Firefox that has known security vulnerabilities in it. Tor is very useful for its design, but it also has some serious drawbacks, and you can actually expose yourself to more risk. So be a little bit careful with Tor. One thing I will point out is Google has been pushing for many years to enable all websites to go to HTTPS. And this is part of the reason is that while they may see you go to Google, they have no idea what your ISP is doing on Google. Only Google knows that, right? So if you're, so the best benefit most people have is just make sure you use HTTPS whenever possible. And if you really want to be too paranoid, probably go to a VPN tunnel. You can buy providers that they tend to offer terms of services that won't sell you data and stuff, or use free ones, but you're kind of at the mercy because the VPN provider could then sell your data too. So be aware of that. You know, be safe. HTTPS will cover almost all the stuff people need to really worry about, though.
Joel, did you have something to mention?
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, I mean, you're right. There are lots of ways to kind of get around, you know, the ISPs being able to, you know, collect data on you. I think that if this continues like this, we're going to see lots of companies come out and maybe offer easy ways to do that. But the thing that really bugs me is you shouldn't have to do this. You shouldn't have to go get a tunnel VPN in order to protect, you know, data that you do that. Nobody would tolerate that with phone calls, that same level of collection. So it's kind of unfortunate we would have to, you know, go through those steps in order to do the same with our internet data.
Sure. Amos, any final comments on that?
Well, one, I would pick up where Jeff left off there. If don't use Tor unless you know what you're doing. That is just going to get you in. It's a quagmire that most people don't want to get into. And then I think the analogy of the phone system is great. If we had to go take extra steps to keep our phone conversation secure or not have people listen in, or have, you know, at least the conversation topics be able to be sold. Amos called Kent yesterday, and they talked about Harley Davidsons for 2.5 hours, and it sounds like Amos is really interested in buying a new fairing. Those are the sorts of things we wouldn't put up with at all, and I agree. We shouldn't have to do that on the internet either.
But today I can go put something in a shopping cart and on the online, and it's going to start showing up in my Facebook feed almost immediately for more versions
of
that.
Yeah, but the difference there is you choose to do that. You can avoid that by not by either using private browsing, which is available on all browsers, or just not doing that on a personal device, or, you know, being careful about where you go. You don't have that choice if your internet provider is able to track that information.
That's a valid point. And the other thing it highlighted was, how bad some of these VPNs are. Some of them have horrible records, and so it's if you're thinking about shopping around for one, do your homework. Make sure it's going to provide the level of service that you're talking about. There are a number of sites out that rate them, and they'll actually there's a bunch of links you can follow and see how well protected you are right now and where you need to be improved on security. And Jeff, maybe you and I can work together a little bit and put a couple of websites together for the Facebook page for folks to if they're interested in maybe becoming a little bit more secure or a little more private, we can help them with that. I'll give the Facebook page on it's facebook.com/techradio. You can post your comments there, your questions. Don't be shy. Also today, if you'd like to send us a text, you have just a few more minutes. 956-SDPB or 956-7372 is the number to text us. Of course, Twitter users at SDPB or at Kent SDPB will get you messages here as well. A couple of high profile folks passed away this week, and of course, not much to do with technology, but Don Reckles certainly kept me up last night on YouTube watching former clips of that great comedy genius. But the founder of Roland and the TR-808, and I know Joel knows what that is, and I'm going to slaughter the name here, Kitaro Kakashi, died at 87. So he was an electronic instrument pioneer, and he helped create the MIDI standard. And I don't know how many folks out there, it's going to probably take a long time to make people understand that, but Joel, it's MIDI sort of took us from the beeps back in the day on computers to more like music.
Well, I mean, I would say that the MIDI standard basically what it allowed to happen is to for there to be kind of a basic language instruments could use to speak to a computer and back and forth. Anybody out there that listens to any music that's been made in the past, I don't know, 40 years, has been affected by this pioneer in music. And he's been well hailed by, the industry, but a lot of people don't know his name, but everybody out there has been affected by, you know, instruments that this guy has created and the MIDI language. And, if you've ever messed around with digital editing or MIDI editing on a computer for audio, you've used technology that this guy had a hand in. So a big deal, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely want to recognize that. Jeff, I want to move a little bit into security now to round the show out. We've had a couple of things that I want to gauge how worried should we be. The first thing is there's a rash of ongoing attacks damaging routers and other internet-connected appliances, basically so badly they become inoperable. These BrickerBot 1 and BrickerBot 2, which is supposedly far worse than the original BrickerBot. What's going on with those? Do we need to worry about that? These mainly affect internet appliances that are running Linux.
Well, yeah, and also haven't followed any good security practices at all either. If you have listened to us talk over the years about keeping your firmware up to date and changing your default passwords, these you have nothing to worry about. Most of these bots at this point take either advantage of a very old vulnerability or they rely on the username and password to be the default. And then they log in and they actually delete the file systems and stuff. So while the device isn't bricked, in many cases it's going to take more time and money to fix than it is worth just going buying a new one. The hardware itself is not being damaged in most cases. It's just being erased, like you format your C drive in the old days or take out your hard drive of your computer, you could always put a new hard drive in. The problem with, like, many of these devices is so cheap that taking the time to actually try to fix it is not worth it. So, but yes, it is happening. It is to be aware of. But if you follow good security practices of changing your default password, keeping your firmwares up to date, and many routers today are actually starting to update automatically, you're good. The problem is going to be a lot of, and especially if you have any kind of firewall between your device and the internet, you should be good. The problem is a lot of people are starting to get a lot more devices like light bulbs and stuff like that, and they don't change default passwords or even realize there's a username or password on these devices, and they have no firewall. They expose them to the internet, and those are the devices being bricked in mass, and it's a lot of them being bricked. So if you did basic security precautions, you're pretty safe. So
okay. Second one is the Wi-Fi proximity deal with Wi-Fi signals. The folks are able to take over the device. This has been demonstrated. I'm not sure. Has this been in the wild yet, the vulnerability for this, the Broadcom chipset?
Yeah. There's been, over the years, more than one vulnerability like this. It's kind of interesting because what they're doing is attacking the drivers. And you don't really think, you worry about updating your browser on your computer and stuff, but you don't really always think about updating your drivers, especially your wireless driver. Because most of the times, hackers can't attack the drivers unless they have physical access to your machine. Wi-Fi gives them the ability to attack at a distance directly your hardware, in this case your Wi-Fi, because it is, you know, a radio. So if they can get within signal coverage of your Wi-Fi, they can then try to hack it. And this will all be solved by driver updates and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is a lot of people get very anxious about driver updates because sometimes they can break stuff. And if you break your Wi-Fi, then you lose all your network, right? So I've seen people really put off driver updates. Windows 10 doesn't let you do that anymore. It will force the drivers to be updated to be secure. And there are also video card drivers that have security holes like this and stuff, but they're much harder to exploit because you need, you know, physical access to the machine.
Sure.
Wi-Fi makes, and Bluetooth makes it very simple, and there have been Bluetooth ones too. Just keep your drivers updated. This hasn't been, by the time this one gets out in the public, there'll be new drivers out that will protect you from it.
Okay. Apple's already patched with Monday's release of 10.3.1. And so we're just looking for an Android update on that then, and everything's going to be good. Well, that's great news. Guys, we're out of time. I want to thank you so much. Amos, Aesop, thank you for your time today. Really appreciate your insights. Joel Brovelite, of course, from Sioux Falls, our Matt Guru, and from our Bureau and Peer, Jeff Litterick. Thank you, guys. We appreciate your expertise today, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks.